Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you are a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We are here to talk about The Skeleton Key.
Ooh.
I love this movie. Released in 2005.
Oh, long time ago now. Jesus, 20 years.
Oh my God.
Right?
Oh God. Okay. Yeah. So I'm reading also from my phone the synopsis. So if I'm like squinting and taking a while, that's
she's going to need some extra Botox in the forehead after this episode. But before that, Meredith is going to tell us what's new with her.
Right. So because of my, I guess, not being up to, well, not up to the task of podcasting, just like not as prepared as I would be. Mm-hmm. I had my open house 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice. And we were, you know, it's kind of like in first grade, you're kind of like a little factory of creating stuff to like have, you know, projects ready for your parents to see.
Yeah, you want to impress them.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm like, some of my fast finishers will show me something. I'm like, no. Go back to your table and erase that.
Do it again.
No, do it again. So there's lots of laminating, lots of cutting, lots of, and I say we, I mean my room parent who helped me a lot.
Yeah.
But I was laminating a lot and organizing, and that was a great turnout. And a lot of prospective families want to come interview you as your, you know, prospective first grade families. And so I'm an introvert, obviously, as you know. So I came home. And I was so tired, and my eyeballs felt like heavy, and like my eyelids felt like sandy and scratchy because I was just like, ugh, so tired.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, I felt like I was hungover.
You're like, what? But happened?
I was like, I haven't. I feel fine. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not sick, and I didn't drink a drop of anything. I just felt,
even water.
No water. No wonder I felt like shit. No. And then the next day, we had put on our calendar the previous year to have early release the day after open house. And I was like, that's the best decision we ever made, is having releasing an hour earlier than we usually do. So that was really great. So then I ran home and watched another movie for our podcast, and then went out to take our son with Victor to go get his my son's friend his gift, and then rush him over to Burlingame to Topgolf.
Oh, no.
Then we went and got Charlotte, her friend, another gift at Sephora, and then came home, and then I watched the baseball game, the Dodgers game, and just, like, went unconscious, I think.
Dissociated.
I don't even know what happened. But I'm here and refreshed and ready to talk about this movie, which I love so much. So,
excellent.
How was your – what is your open house even? Has it happened yet?
We don't do open house.
What?
No, we have a curriculum night at the beginning of the year, which isn't really a back to school night because it's like right at the beginning of the year, and it's really just like come meet your teachers and get all the information for the year.
Okay. Well, that's kind of our back to school. Like it's only parents.
Yeah.
Is it parents and kids or no?
Yeah. The kids aren't invited to our curriculum night.
One year our principal allowed kids to come and it was the worst.
Yeah.
Because not that I don't enjoy students, obviously I'm in the education profession, but I couldn't even talk to the parents because the kids were running around ripping apart the room.
Our curriculum like, night
oh
is like,
this is terrible.
It's like presentation, so like since we're, you know,
that helps.
Shared,
that's how it usually is
our fifth and sixth, and so you know, so I have my sixth grade homeroom, but I also teach literature for the other sixth grade homeroom and both fifth grade classes.
Okay.
And so like we have the four teachers in our little block, so on curriculum night, you know, we have like like our initial, we have like 20 minutes to present to our homeroom group on homeroom subjects, general information, and our core subject. Mm-hmm. And then the teachers rotate. We're like running from one room to the next to go give the same core subject presentation to the other three classes, 10 minutes each. So it's...
That's not stressful at all.
No. But yeah, we don't do any kind of back to school, or I'm not back to school, but...
like an open house?
Open house or anything like that. I think that maybe they used to as part, because there's something called Catholic Schools Week that's in January, I think, every year. And I think that our school used to have some sort of program as part of that, but it hasn't been around since I've been at the school.
So it's been a minute then.
Yeah.
You've been there for a while.
In some capacity. Yeah, I guess 13 years now I've been at the school. But I was just thinking how it was kind of strange that, you know, this last week was your open house when it was also Teacher Appreciation Week. Like, here, we appreciate you by making you do this extra job.
We appreciate you. Come to work unpaid.
Yeah.
It's a professional obligation.
Yeah, right. Non-negotiable.
I know. Non-negotiable. Well, I mean, I enjoy it, but it's also, there's also testing for the upper grades too, state testing. I'm like, this is all too much.
This is not a good week.
Yeah. So open house, I think we've decided to kind of move it a little bit later in the year. Yeah. So it's not all at the same time, because that's a lot for especially the upper grades teachers. I feel bad for them.
We had our standardized testing this week as well, like the first week of our fourth testing period of the year. Mm-hmm. But that's actually like, I don't mind that. It's annoying having to adjust the schedule around it, but it's just, you know, quiet time for me.
Sure.
To be productive.
There's no,
it's like
state proctor thing.
But, no. I get them all going, and then I just get to do other stuff until they're all done.
It's like your own planning period.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's funny, I got kind of a fun smattering of teacher appreciation gifts.
Well, one thing.
I got, like, you know, and I don't get gifts from, like, every family and every student, but, like, you know, I always get a couple from my fifth graders. I got another succulent to add to my succulent garden in the classroom from a fifth grader. And then another fifth grader. It's funny. I had run into her and her family at this market, Gus's Market, on Noriega in our neighborhood. And so with her gift was a Gus's gift card.
They're like, we know you go here.
We know you go there. and then I got a very generous, just little basket from... that the room parents from my class put together from like the entire class. Mm-hmm. And it was like a very, very hefty, generous cash tucked into the card.
That's nice.
But it was sweet because like the rest of the things in the basket were like tea themed, like a teapot and a cup and like all these different like tea stuff and everything, all from like based on the stickers from World Market. Mm-hmm. And then as the room parent that like presented it to me was walking out of the room, one of my students goes, "Aren't you more of a coffee person?" I'm like, "Shut up, Tiffany. Nobody asked you. She's still here."
You're like, "I think this is garbage." No. That's tricky. You're like, "Oh, thank you." And you're like, "I don't actually like
maybe
tea.
Grace will like this," because Grace drinks tea sometimes. The highlight definitely that I already shared with Meredith and Victor as soon as I got it. I do
so
get
fun.
Funko Pops from time to time from my students. And the sweet little fifth grade girl. I mean, you would never think it. She's a little angel. She actually transferred in mid-year this year with her older sister. And they had lived in, they're American, but they lived in France for several years and they had just moved back. And her name is Hazel. Gave me a Funko Pop of Art the Clown from Terrifier, which is
I hope,
like,
she's never seen that movie.
I know, but then I found out, like, so yesterday some of the students had free dress, and a boy in my homeroom, so a sixth grader, was wearing a Terrifier, like an Art the Clown t-shirt, and I was like, "Have you seen those movies?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Do you like them?" And he's like, "Yeah, they're awesome." I'm like, "Dude, Carlo, what the hell?" And normally when that happens, it's because this kid has like a bunch of older siblings. He's the oldest in his family. It's him and his sweet baby angel little brother.
He's pioneering.
Like, what is happening?
Yeah. It's on streaming. It's like on Paramount Plus or something. Yeah. I can't remember. Some streaming platform.
I'm always inclined to watch it. Reach out to the parents and be like, hey, are you aware? Because if you decided it's okay, I'm not going to judge you as a parent.
Sure.
But if you just didn't know, you need to know that you need to check your settings on your whatever.
This is straight up gore.
Yeah, because if you're okay with it, fine. But if you're not okay with it, then you need to do something because this is happening in your household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's like when I had a fifth grader who's now in seventh grade was, I think I told you, was reading it as a fifth grader. And I saw her with it and I was like, And I knew her mom pretty well. And so I checked in with her and she was like,
fun fact.
Yeah.
There's an interesting little tidbits in here you might want to check out.
And I was like, have you read it? And she goes, no. And I was like, do you know what some of the elements in it are? Because it's not just that it's scary.
There's also lots of questionable.
Yeah. And so I got home and I like pulled out my copy and, you know, took some snapshots I didn't take snapshots, but I told her the page numbers of some of the things that she might be concerned about so that she could check her daughter's copy.
Just get a nice little R.L. Stein.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, get something more
fifth grade speed. Because she was a fifth grader at the time.
Yeah. There's tons of options.
Creepy stuff
that are
for younger kids. Yeah.
Yes. That are not. With those elements of molesting and
a gang,
orgy,
orgy things. But and on the flip side, one of my fifth graders is right now reading Catcher in the Rye, and she was like, "When was this written?" And I was like, "Well, let's check the publication date."
It's been a bit.
It was in the 40s originally published, which is a lot older than I would have guessed. She was like, I don't know if it's appropriate for fifth grade. And I was like, you know, and because she's an incredibly bright girl that reads at a very, very high level. And I was straight with her. I was like, you know, when younger kids are reading at a really high level, there is a challenge because you are capable of reading at this level, but this is written for an adult. And so the content is, you know, or not, maybe not, at least a high schooler, not a middle schooler. Yeah. And I was like, so it can be challenging to find books that are difficult enough to challenge you, but have content that's appropriate for your age level. And she's like, yeah, I get that.
Sure. Yeah. So I think I read it and it was required reading in high school, I want to say.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. And that's you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And the Scarlet Letter. Mm-hmm. But then our teacher was like, don't watch the movie. That's not at all what happens in the book.
Yeah. Like, I don't care how sexy Demi Moore is.
Yeah, you're like, they didn't run off together and live happily ever after.
Yeah, this is not like Pocahontas.
No, you're like, Gary Oldman, okay, I understand, right? But like, no.
I would rewrite it for him too.
I would. Oh, yeah, he's the best. I think I said to somebody, I was like, sorry, I'm a little ranting a little bit, but we were talking about people being canceled, and my room parent made an amazing door, and it was for me like door decoration for appreciation week, and it was like Harry Potter themed because she knows I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and I was like, it's hard to like separate the artist from the art because so many people of my childhood heroes are so problematic, and I'm like, I will have nothing if I stop like enjoying some of this content. And there was somebody or two people I was like, if Keanu is like, if he's found to be like a horrible person, I'll be like crushed.
Yeah.
And if Gary Oldman, I was like, please.
Yeah. Let nothing come out about with some friends people. About that. I think one that's pretty like a home run in that if they got canceled, we just all need to quit would be Tom Hanks.
Yeah, just quit life.
Yeah, just quit. Like we're done. America is like, shut down.
We're done with this.
Yeah, no more. So.
Okay.
So, what were you here for again?
We are for
the skeleton key.
So, yeah, it was released in 2005. Kate Hudson plays the main character, Caroline, and there's a pretty great cast in this movie. So it opens with a book a woman reading a book to an elderly patient who's in a hospice bed, I'm guessing a nursing home or care facility of some kind. Mm-hmm. The main character, as I mentioned, played by Kate Hudson. Her name is Caroline. And she's a hospice nurse at work. And as she reads, we see lots of visions of Louisiana Bayou. And they also shot this film there. the filmmaker was very thought it was really important not to kind of pretend that they were there.
Yeah, so they didn't use New Orleans Square at Disneyland for the extras. No.
So they took advantage of that and did a lot of extra like kind of setting shots. Mm-hmm. So her patient dies and they pack up his belongings and she waits with a banker's box full of his stuff. And then after a little bit, she's told to dump the box out in the back, saying that his family wants nothing to do with him. Mm-hmm. So she goes to the back to this big dumpster and Caroline kind of glances inside the dumpster and sees so many banker's boxes full of stuff.
Yeah, people that had died and
nobody cared. Nobody cared enough to like get their things. So she seems like she's ready for a change and she leaves with the box. She doesn't dump it.
Yeah.
So we know that she's someone who cares a lot about her patients and she's compassionate and cares about palliative care and just wants to be there for these people. And, I think she wants to kind of move on. So she is looking for a newspaper, looking for, remember in the olden days when you look for a job in the newspaper?
You circled it with a red pencil.
Yeah. So she's looking for a change and she circles the ad looking for a live-in hospice caretaker. And she shows her friend the ad. Her friend's name is Jill. And she tells her that she's done with being at her work. She's done with that place. And she doesn't like the whole business aspect of the nursing home and not actually caring about the people who are the patients. Her friend tells her, that the location of this in-home care is in the swamps and get ready for a lot of three-toothed yokels, basically.
Right? She's like, girl, that's like out in the bayou.
Like, she's like, that's in the swamps. You cannot go there. And she's not from the States. She's kind of a transplant out
there. She's from Jersey.
Yeah. So, but she's like, no, I'm done. I want to go interview. And so then she and her friend go dance. It's very like they're listening to jazz and blues and they do a lot of like partying, drinking big, huge cups of beer.
God awful stuff.
Yeah. So then she goes to her interview the next day. She, you see that she kept a keychain that she found in the banker's box of the patient who died in the beginning of the movie. I forget what it says. It's like live hard or something like that.
Live fast or live. Die young, live fast, die young. One of those things.
One of those, yeah. So she's driving, and she's driving an old bug car. The place is remote. There's a long, long driveway with long, trees lining the driveway, and it's a plantation style home. And it's large and a bit overgrown. There's some wear and tear on the home, and the paint needs to be, it's not like a run-down, gross place, but it seems like it's a little bit neglected.
Yeah, it's not shiny.
Yeah. So she knocks at the door, and nobody answers, and she comes inside. There's a lot of religious paintings. It looks like someone's cooking in the kitchen. Then she finds two older people in the back. Ben Devereaux, who is getting a haircut, and he's played by John Hurt.
Yeah.
My autocorrect changed it to Bert.
Oh, yeah.
John Hurt. And he is in it's kind of like a wicker-backed wheelchair kind of thing. And he's the patient. And Violet Devereaux, who is played by Jenna Rowland, and she's cutting his hair. Mm-hmm. And Violet is Ben's wife. And then there's Luke Marshall, played by Peter Skarsgård, who is their estate lawyer. Luke shares that the patient, Ben, he's been like this for about a month, and Violet is having trouble accepting it. But she does need support in his care with what, she can't take it all on herself. But she's also a little bit stubborn about it. Like, I can do it myself. At least that's what Luke kind of, the story he gives Caroline. Yeah. Luke does the introduction and Violet just sort of looks at her and walks off. And she's not really receptive to Caroline.
She's not super impressed.
No. She's upset that Caroline isn't from New Orleans, but she also comments that the last girl up and left.
Mm-hmm.
Caroline is like, wants to leave. She's like, if she doesn't want me here, I'm out of here.
Yeah, right? This isn't going to work if she doesn't accept me.
Right. And then Luke talks her. She's like stormed out. She's at her little Volkswagen bug, and Luke talks to her about grief. He's like, she's in grief, that's the love of her life. Of course she's resistant to this huge change. Mm-hmm. It's gonna change the rest of her life. And she's also the fifth person that has shown up, and that Violet has kind of rejected every person who's come to, you know,
interview
for the job. Violet also mentions that Caroline won't understand the house, and Luke says he doesn't really understand what that means, because Violet's like, she's not from here. She won't even understand the house, you know.
Yeah, and, really, and you're like, what
is there to understand?
It's it's a building.
Right. And Luke was like, I don't know what that means. It's probably some old Louisiana superstition stuff, right?
And have they already told her what happened to Ben? Do they do that later?
I'm not really sure. I think the story is obviously that he had a stroke at some point the month before, right?
Yeah, and then because then eventually they say that he was up in the attic when he had it.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. I know. I know I mentioned it at some point, but I don't know if that came up at this point.
Yeah.
So, Caroline asks Luke what she should say to Violet, you know, to kind of get her to, you know, accept her, and he says that, you know, she can look all she wants, and she won't find anyone better than her. So then Caroline moves away from her. Good friend, she knows she takes the job. We see a lot of the Louisiana bayou, and you know, she drives back out to that plantation house to live and to care for Ben. Caroline on the way though stops and tries to pay for gas at a pretty abandoned looking scary looking gas station with bones and weird things hanging around. A blind woman holding a baby, speaking French, she's Creole, is there, and it feels kind of startling for Caroline. And I would say this is like a harbinger.
Exactly moment. What I was thinking. Yeah.
Like, don't go there. There's, was it? There's, you know, the guy in Friday Cabin the 13th.
Oh, Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Oh,
and Cabin in the Woods.
You're all doomed.
You're all doomed. Yeah. It's that's what it felt like. And Cabin in the Woods, like the harbinger. And they're like, did the harbinger tell them, you know, to turn back? So anyway, Caroline sets up a room and she notices that all. The mirrors are all missing. And she goes to take care of Ben, who's in bed, and he grabs her arm. Violet shows up and gives her husband his remedies. She's like, he needs his remedies. And it's like a cup of kind of like, you know, cloudy liquid.
Yeah, like it's dissolved. Yeah. Well, and it's like she said, you know, Caroline asks what it is, because she's like, she's a nurse. Like, that this is what she's there for. And she's like, oh, it's Coumadin and such.
It reminds me, like, it's... Shoot, was it when Minnie says, when Rosemary's like, what's in it? Oh. She's like, oh, snips and snails and puppies, dogs, tails. And she's like, what if I want a girl? She's like, do you want a girl? You know, I don't know. But it's like, freaking tell her what's in it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's a little suspicious when it's like, oh, this and that. Like, this okay. And that,
you know, and you're like, okay.
And he has to have it in the morning and at night.
Yeah, his remedies. So. Violet explains that she and her husband bought the house from two people in the 1960s, and there's a photo of the two children with a man and a woman. A man and woman are both people of color. They're black, and they're wearing like servants' clothing, and the children are white, white children. So, but she holds on to this photograph, and she's like, "This house's history is important, and I honor them by keeping their memory alive." And Violet shows Caroline the skeleton key that opens all 30 rooms in the house. Caroline asks where the mirrors are, and Violet mentions that when you get all worn out and wrinkled, you don't need reminding. So Caroline's like, that's fair, I guess.
A little weird, but okay.
So, but she's like, if you need a mirror for yourself, you know, hang one up, that's fine. So then she says, for your own purposes, you can have a mirror. So later, Caroline takes care of Ben and brings him outside. Violet gardens and asks Caroline to go get some seeds for her. She goes to the attic, and it's a little bit suspenseful when she finds a door that's obscured by a big shelf and supplies. Caroline tries to use the key, but it doesn't work. The door behind her suddenly slams shut the door into the attic, and she kind of bails pretty quickly because it's a creaky old attic with a whole bunch of crap and mirrors that she notices, too.
Like, oh, this is where they all got put.
Yeah, and just a lot of just weird stuff.
And isn't the hidden door like kind of like rattling or something?
Yeah, and it was rattling and it was kind of shaking, and that's what got her attention in the first place. And so she kind of tries to look in and can't really see anything. And then the door behind her slammed shut. So she's like, oh, I'm out of here.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not so curious anymore.
Yeah, bye. And so she Runs out, that's wrong. Runs out and goes back down. Violet suddenly pops up and asks, you know, what took Caroline so long? And Caroline asks her, you know, why didn't the key work on the door that she just found? And she's like, oh, it's never been opened.
Like, I don't know. It doesn't work. I've never been in there.
Right. And I guess you kind of wonder, like, how can people live somewhere and never open a door somewhere? Yeah. But it's like a massive house. And I would look, but I guess some people are fine just having, you know, hidden door rooms.
Hidden rooms. Well, yeah, and they've already laid the ground. Like, they bought it from this other family. We know that the house is older than their ownership. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, if you bought a house and you went up in the attic and there was a door you couldn't open, you might just be whatever.
You're like, okay.
I'll just put a shelf in front of it.
Right. It kind of made me think of the other. So all these rooms just full of stuff. Yeah. And they're like, we don't know.
Is it even your stuff? Was it here when you moved in?
Sure. And they're like, we don't pay in any mind. And you're like, okay, well, I guess we just live over here and the room's by itself over there.
Yeah.
So Violet says, it was never opened. And Caroline also mentioned. So I think that Luke did tell Caroline about Ben having his stroke in the attic. And she goes, Carol, you know, Ben was in the attic when he had a stroke. You know, is there a connection? And Violet's like, well, you'll have to ask Ben what he was doing in the attic.
Real snotty. Who's
can't speak.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that'll be productive conversation. Anyway, later it's storming and Caroline wakes up and hears a rattling noise and some noises. She finds Ben out of bed and hears rattling noises. She's trying to look around for him. She's looking under the bed and all over the floor and everywhere. And she was told he was bedbound and not like, able
can't
to
walk,
really.
Can't move.
Mm-hmm. So then she discovers that Ben is on the roof. It's like a metal slatted roof. And he's like pulling himself on the roof.
Straight crawled out the window.
Yeah, he's like, ah. He like sees her. He's like, no. And like keeps dragging himself. And she's like, holy crap, Ben. You know, and she, you know, sees writing on his sheets in dirt that say, help me.
Yeah.
So that's great. And she runs over to Violet because they're not in the same room.
Right.
Violet is in another room and she runs over to like pound on the door and say like, Mrs. Devereaux, like
your husband's on the roof.
There's an emergency. So, you know, they're both trying to help him and Ben drags himself off of the roof and falls onto the ground pretty far. And he's a feeble elderly man. And that's, you know, probably kind of scary. So and it's also storming like crazy also with lightning and thunder and Louisiana rains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're like outside just drenched.
It's like torrential downpour. Yeah. Yeah. So the next morning she shows Luke the sheets. She's like, come here. I want to show you something. Mm-hmm. I think there might be maybe some abuse happening, you know, from her perspective. She sees an older man who's trying to get out. He's saying, help me. He's grabbing her arm. So you would think maybe neglect of some kind. Yeah.
But and the same like when it's all like happening and like Caroline says to her, like, I thought you said he couldn't walk or something like that.
Yeah.
Like Violet asks her, like, did he take his remedies? Did he take them all? Yeah. And Caroline was like, I gave it to him. I thought he did, you know. And so it's like it's kind of weird that Caroline or Violet is associating Ben doing this with not getting his medicine.
Right. And then she was so she was gatekeeping what was in the medicine too. So Caroline's making the connections, like something
this is suspicious,
strange.
Yeah.
So she tries to show Luke the sheets and he's kind of to her, he's an objective observer. He's a lawyer. He's like a guy who's
that's his only connection to the family.
Not like a family member or anything. So she tries to show him, but the writing is gone. So he's like, what are you showing me? She's like, what? And then so she's kind of questioning her own because it was like a stressful moment. There's the power was, I think the power was out or whatever, but she couldn't really see. And there was lightning and she heard like crazy rattling. And maybe she's like, oh, well, maybe I imagined it. Yeah, maybe I imagined or whatever. So she, at this point, Luke says, you know, I admire you, Caroline, for taking care of these sick people and having, you know, such compassion. I could never do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then so she tells him her story with her dad. So she was supposed to go to college, and she, I think she dropped out, and her dad didn't approve, and she went to go on tour with friends who were in a band, and they kind of like very much disconnected, and mm-hmm. she was like, you know, she said she was stubborn and proud, and then before she knew it, her dad had gotten sick and passed away before she could have a chance to kind of even reconnect or have any kind of relationship, and mm-hmm. That weighs heavily on her and so who she is.
She's caring for other people because she couldn't care for her dad.
Right.
Or she didn't get a chance to.
Yeah. They're kind of taking the place of that. And that's kind of explains who she is and why she cares so much. Yeah. And it's like less of a job to her than kind of a calling, I guess.
Born of trauma.
Yeah. Born of trauma. So at this point, she, you know, she tells Luke, I feel like Ben is trying to communicate it's just like with a look or something. He keeps like looking into her eyes.
Yeah, like really intensely.
And she feels like he's trying to tell her something, but she doesn't know what. Mm-hmm. So now Caroline is on a mission to figure out what's going on. She uses a bobby pin and is able to retrieve a key, and she's able to open the door and discovers a bunch of, I said, creepy shit.
Yeah.
Let me go back. She looks in that door, that the room that can't be opened.
Yeah, in the attic.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say just like some random door. So it's that door she couldn't get into earlier. She goes back and she discovers a bunch of creepy shit, books, bones, masks,
big jars filled with liquid and floating things. It's
floating
like
things.
I was definitely thinking in that scene of like how often a set dresser's job is to create a room or a space like this that's just supposed to
They're
be
like we need fetuses.
We need fetuses and jars with liquid. We need bones
and eyeballs and feathers.
Eyeballs, and we need burlap lots of cobwebs.
Records
definitely. Records. Yellowed papers, books with no covers. Like, you know, that's somebody's job on these films is to like
create these spaces.
Yeah, right.
I love having that job. Because you'd probably be going to like real estate sales and things.
Garage
like,
sales.
How many haunted dolls can I find
here?
Yeah,
like what's the most busted stuff you have?
Yes. So she also finds a photo album with the same two children and the servants and who are, let me go back. I don't remember if she named them yet.
No, it was written on the back of the first photo that she saw downstairs.
Right. So it was Papa Justify and Madame Cecile, who were married and together, and they were, you know, a family. So then she finds a book that has ceremonies and a record that says Papa Justify Conjure Sacrifice 1920. And while she's snooping, Violet goes in looking for her. She's like, Caroline, would you like some tea? And then there's a little bit of a pursuit as Caroline hides just in time and discovers all of... Oh, let me go back. I guess she didn't discover or notice the mirrors were all up there before, but they're there and they're covered. Sorry, I was mistaken earlier. Yeah. I think they're in the hidden room. So,
I think they were in the outer room.
Am I misremembering?
Yeah.
There's just so much crap everywhere.
Yes.
It's hard for me to notice. So...
It would make a great VRBO.
Right, yeah. So she takes the record and she takes it to her friend Jill's house and she listens to the record. And her friend, I guess they're close enough where she can let herself in and she's like listening to the record. And Jill comes home from whatever she's doing and discovers her.
Did they used to be roommates?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but she's moved out. So it's like, you know, the pretense of like, I just get to come in for the rest of my life because we used to be roommates. So Jill comes in and discovers her listening to it. And, you know, she's like, what is this? And she's like, let's go get a drink.
And that'll solve it.
Yeah. So Jill, she tells her that her friend that she found this room with all the shit in there. Mm-hmm. She like kind of describes it to Jill and Jill's like, that's a hoodoo room.
Yep.
That you found. Cause she's from the state and she knows very much the cultural history of all that stuff. And she tells Caroline the origin of what hoodoo is. It's not voodoo. There's a lot of power. There's a lot of superstition and magic and other things. Mm-hmm. And voodoo has a lot of entities and a lot of Catholic symbolism as well. Mm-hmm. So this is very different. It doesn't really have much power over you if you don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, out where she's living now, Caroline, there's a lot of belief in that stuff. So she takes Caroline to a place where Aunt shops for hoodoo stuff. And Caroline's like, okay, let's go in. And Jill's like, yeah, no.
I'm
not going in there. She's like, I thought you didn't believe in that. She's like, I don't, but I'm not even going to give it the time of day.
I don't mess with it either.
Yeah. And it's a washateria. And I guess in the back is a hoodoo shop. Yeah. But in the end, Caroline just kind of bails and goes home. She goes to check on Ben and she puts a mirror up in Ben's room, which is then discovered the following morning when Violet, finds it, mm-hmm. and she has a tray with his remedies and it drops on the ground and she's super pissed. And she's like, this house, that shouldn't be up. What are you doing? Yeah. You have like basically no respect for this place. And, this house doesn't actually belong to them and it belongs to other people. Mm-hmm. And how could you do this? And Caroline's like, I don't understand. Yeah. Can you explain? So
she's like, I told you wouldn't understand the house.
Violet's like, all right, shit. Let me get my brown cigarette or my clove or whatever she's smoking. So she explains to Caroline, 90 years ago at the plantation, there was a banker named Thorpe who had two children and servants. And he was an awful, awful and cruel man. And he had servants who were very respected mm-hmm. and who revered in the community. And they healed the sick. And they hurt the mean. And those people were Papa, Justify, and Mama. Is it Mama or Madam?
I don't remember.
Mama Cecile.
Yeah.
So he worked the servants really hard and he abused them and he was terrible to them. Until one night there was a party and the guests wanted to tell the children goodnight. And it was a little bit of a game.
Because guests are all hella drunk.
All drunk.
Because this was during Prohibition, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was in the... In the movie, for the mm-hmm. viewer, we are watching basically this happen. It's all black and white. It seems very like silent movie kind of.
Yeah.
Like
vaudeville.
Vaudeville. Like, let's find the children. Where are the children?
So I'm gonna run through with my pearls and my highball glass.
Yes. So finally, after a while, they found the children with the servants in the hoodoo room, and Papa Justify and Mama Cecile are in the middle of a ritual. The children are in the middle of this circle. And the children said that, hey, they wanted to learn about hoodoo. And they're in the middle of a ritual. And Mama Cecile and Papa Justify are kind of like nonverbal. They're a little bit shaking and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And
in a trance.
And the children are horrified. And the guests are so upset. They basically pulled them out of the house and hanged Papa Justify and Mama Cecile and set them on fire as the children watched horrified from the window.
Because that's, all good Bayou parties got to end with a lynching.
A little lynching. Well,
a little light lynching.
I wish I was wrong about that. Anyways. Yeah, yeah. After that, the bank went under and Thorpe shot his wife and then himself. Mm-hmm. And the children just stayed in the home. They kept the room locked. They kept no mirrors. And they lived there for the rest of their lives until they sold the property to them, mm-hmm. basically. So Violet told Caroline, that they can see Papa Justify and Mama Cecile in the mirrors. And she also mentioned, brick dust being in a line and it's a form of protection. And she's kind of like just going on and on. Mm-hmm. And Caroline thinks she's kind of full of shit, maybe a little bit paranoid, maybe a little bit bananas, like
senile.
She's like, okay, because she's coming from a caretaker point of view, like, right. Also, what is she doing to her husband because of all of these things that she believes in that right. probably aren't real. Mm-hmm. She also says that whoever did it to Ben, they did this to Ben, and I'm not gonna let them do it to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna end up, and I know that I've told you all this, Caroline. And you're going to end up leaving like all the rest of them.
Right.
So she's like, let me just give you an extra dose of guilt, Caroline.
Let me manipulate you just a bit.
Because, of the sordid history of the home, mm-hmm. People have fled. And she, it's a little bit of a call for help. And, because Violet's kind of, wanting to have her stay for sure. She doesn't want her to leave. So later, Caroline finds some jars of brick dust and she kind of considers it a little bit. She's like, oh yeah. So she really, Violet is very much into this, believes mm-hmm. in this shit. And she gives Ben a bath and, you know, later, she's like taking it all in, kind of, I guess, chewing on all this new information, and she's bathing Ben. And I think considering if she's going to stay or not. Mm-hmm. And she splashes her eye and she takes out a mirror compact and looks in her own eye. And then she like kind of glances at Ben and she thinks, you know,
maybe
you show Ben himself and see what he does. So she shows him himself and he has an incredibly violent reaction. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at this point, Caroline goes to the hoodoo store.
Yeah. She's like, all right, let's find out some more here.
Yeah. She's like, whatever Ben's afflicted with, I think it's imagined.
Yeah.
And maybe if she didn't believe in it, it's maybe like, it makes me think of The Exorcist, if when they're like, we don't believe in this. And the doctors are like, but maybe psychologically this could help an exorcism, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That it's like, you know, the demon isn't real. But if the person who's suffering believes that they are possessed, then they will believe in an exorcism and it might be effective in a mental health way.
It could be some sort of solution. Yeah. So she asks how, you know, the woman back there she's being asked by the other locals what to do to treat their ailments. And mm-hmm. she's asked by this woman who obviously doesn't really belong there, like, what's brick dust for? And she says, but she's really nice. And she's like, oh, it, you know,
she's not like, get out of here.
Get the hell out of here. She's like, oh, you got money to spend, let me tell you. So she's like, would you put a line out at the door and anyone can't cross who means you harm. She also Caroline tells the woman about Ben's condition and, you know, how can I uncross him? How do I help somebody who believes they've been crossed? Mm-hmm. And how do I help them? So she tells Jill about her plan. She gets all these things and she has a box full of stuff and mm-hmm. she goes back to Jill's apartment.
She spends hundreds of dollars at the hoodoo store.
Yeah.
Give me it all.
Yeah. And Jill, she's like, I have to help Ben. You know, I want to, you know, do this ritual and help him because he feels like he's been crossed. I think he feels this will help him. Mm-hmm. And Jill's like, I'm not really sure why you're attached to him.
Yeah,
you know,
like, why do you care so much?
Why don't you just leave? Mm-hmm. And she's like, Ben isn't your dad. And then Caroline's like, fuck you, basically. No, she's like, I can't leave him. Like, I can't do that. And I'm going to go back and help. And but Jill has a point. You know, she can't solve everyone's problems. So Caroline goes back to the plantation house. She brings all of these ritual materials and performs the ritual on Ben. She says the words, cleanse this man, cleanse this room, cleanse this house. And Ben seems to respond to the words that she's saying. And he starts stammering words to Caroline, saying, help, help, help.
Yeah, like
help.
He's trying so mm-hmm. hard to produce words.
Yeah, and then Violet wakes up from her. She's kind of dozing in front of the TV downstairs, and Violet wakes up. And he tells her, you know, get me out of here.
Yeah.
Get me out of here. And Caroline asks, like, who are you afraid of? Who are you afraid of? And Violet kind of is, you know, hammering at the door because the door is locked. She's like, why is this door locked? You know, Caroline, what's going on? And he points at Violet. Mm-hmm. So Caroline is able to gather all of the hoodoo stuff right in time and put it in her little carry-all purse. And she's able to leave. And she's like, what have you done to him? And she's like, I was just trying to, like, you know, give him a sponge bath, you know, like, help him. And he just had a really bad reaction. I don't really know. She just plays ignorant. And I guess to me, that would be pretty smart, because to Violet, this is a woman from New Jersey. Why would she be doing hoodoo stuff?
Yeah, like, right? She would assume that she wouldn't know anything about any of that.
Right. So that night, Caroline has a vivid dream about Mama Cecile smoking, and Caroline wakes up with the image of her eyes and her own mouth being sewn shut, which is horrifying. Then she sees a shadow of a figure at the door, and she goes to see what's happening. But she doesn't find Violet. The next morning, she's like, I've had enough of this place. And she starts to packing and sees a pathetic looking Ben on the porch. Mm. And it's like just so sad. He looks just so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And she then glances at the picture of herself as a girl with her dad. And of course, she stays, right? Because she has this immense guilt. She shows pictures of the attic to Luke. Later, she goes to his office. When they first met, he gave her a card. Like, if you need anything, come visit me. He's a legitimate, you know, lawyer, and he has a law firm and all that stuff. So she shows him the attic with all the hoodoo stuff. He's like, it's charming in local color, you know, like there's a lot of, you know, suspicion, you know, but there's a lot of suspicion in my own family, you know, but it's a Baptist kind of suspicion, right? Yeah. Right? Everyone has their thing. And then she asks to go talk to the last nurse who left. And so Luke and takes Caroline to go talk to her. And they have a discussion. And she's a woman of color. And it's funny because I'll explain later a little bit. But she kind of tells Caroline, you know, her mom found out. And they're locals, right? Mm-hmm. Her mom found out where she was working. And she's like, get out of that house. Yeah. You're not working there, basically. Yeah. And those people are bad news. Mm-hmm. So you're not staying. So she left and listened to her mother, which was smart.
Smart.
Yeah. So on the way home, they stop and talk to an old blind woman at that gas station that she stumbled upon earlier in the movie. And Caroline hears records being played. She tells Caroline, and she kind of like stumbled. It's like the living quarters of the gas station owner. So she kind of very much went somewhere she shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. But the woman tells her, you know, explains to her that she's like, I've heard records like this before. And Caroline, you know, asks, you know, what it is. And the woman says it's a conjurer of sacrifice and it keeps you alive, you know, but Papa Justify couldn't get it to work. So he's very much, even though Papa Justify had died 100 years before, or 80, I guess, in 2005. He's still very much part of the community.
Yeah.
And
remembered
and revered. So, you know, she wants to try to figure out how to get proof that Violet is hurting Ben because she feels there's an abuse case of some kind. She's spoken to this lawyer who's Luke, and he's like, give me more time to take some, you know, see what I can do legally. Yeah. You know, like you don't really need to do this, but I guess this is something you have to do. Mm-hmm. So Caroline goes into her room. She goes back to the house and she goes to her room and finds that the record is no longer in her suitcase. And in the kitchen, Violet is, you know, opening a book that looks pretty familiar from the hoodoo room. And she's kind of consulting it. Caroline tries to get Violet to come into her room a little bit later, but she can't cross. And she's like, oh, there's a leak in my room. Come over here and take a look. And Violet's about to cross and she can't. And she's like, no, it's no big deal. But you can't really see from here. What's going on?
Yeah.
So
because Caroline had put brick dust along the edge of her bedroom doorway, but like under the rug, so you couldn't see that it was there.
Yeah. So she's like, oh, no, you're funny, Caroline. I have dinner cooking on the stove.
I don't have time for your nonsense.
I don't have time for the shenanigans. And she's like, could you do an old woman a favor and have dinner with me? So Caroline is pretty much convinced now that Violet has. She's bad news, basically. And she's not the vulnerable person that she kind of tried
well, and
to
that also that she means harm for Caroline, not just for Ben, because it's like you can't cross the brick dust if you mean harm to that person.
Right. So Caroline tells Ben that they're leaving tonight. She gets a syringe and she fills the sugar cubes with something that would, I was assume, incapacitate Violet. Unfortunately, Violet doesn't take sugar in her tea at dinner. So she pours, when Violet, like, walks away from the table, she just straight up takes the vial and, like, pours it into her tea.
Yeah.
And then Violet comes back and takes a big old gulp of it. I'm assuming it's sweet tea.
No, because she didn't want to put sugar. Yeah, and, like, Caroline was not very chill about that. She was like, you always have sugar in your tea. Like, you never have tea without,
put some goddamn sugar in your tea.
I'm like, dude, like, you got to play it cool.
Play it cool, man. So Violet passes out. And you know what?
What?
Sorry. Sweet tea. No. In the South, you don't put like sugar cubes in
your tea. No, you don't sweeten individual teas.
No.
You make.
Especially if it's cold because the sugar won't dissolve properly. Yeah. So you make it and you pour friggin' cups full of sugar into the sweet tea when it's warm and make it hot. Mm-hmm. And it's like hot sweet tea until it cools and then you ice it.
Yeah.
Everybody friggin' knows this. Come on, Caroline.
Well, yeah, not
come on, stupid Caroline from New Jersey. Okay, so, yeah, so she pours this, I guess, horse tranquilizer or whatever into her cup of tea. It's ketamine. And she took a big old gulp of it. She asks, you know, Violet, you know, Caroline's like, what did you do to Ben? And she says she can, you know, I can do what I want to my husband, basically. And you're like, yeah. She's like, can you though? Can you do that? And then Violet stands up. She's like, what did you do? And she passes out and sort of. She's still a little bit conscious and she takes out chalk and tries to draw a circle on the floor. And in her effort to find the record, Caroline's trying to find it. She's like running around the house, scrambling, trying to get the fuck out of there with Ben. She tries to find the record so they can leave. And she finds a sheet that says, help me, mm-hmm. the one that was hidden. And then she finds a cutting of her hair. That's great.
Yep.
And, you know, she at this point, she loads Ben into the car, but the rain is just pouring. It's crazy. There's mud everywhere. And they're driving in her little tiny Volkswagen Beagle. That's wrong. Beetle. And the gate is chained closed. So she tries to ram her car through, but her car is janky and old and tiny. And
you can't do that.
Yeah. So she's
not a Hummer.
No. She loses control, ends up hiding. Ben, because the car's just crashed out, it's not drivable. And she hides Ben where the boat is docked. And she, you know, gets out of there on a boat.
Like, and yeah, she like puts it's a little shed, and she like puts him in there, and he's still fairly immobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so she like promises him that she'll come back with help, and then like covers him with a tarp.
Yeah, she's like, I'll be right back. Okay,
you so, just stay here.
Violet wakes up. She retrieves her shotgun, and Caroline makes a run for it, trying to get help. And she gets into the boat and is able to paddle away quickly. And she's yelling at her, you know, I'm stronger than her, and you're not going to get away. And she paddles away and manages to hitch a ride to Luke's office. She tells him, you know, Violet tried to shoot me, mm-hmm. you know, and he takes a call from Violet and grabs his recorder, because to Caroline, he's still an objective observer.
Like, right. And like Violet calls him. And he's like,
oh, Mrs. Devereaux. Oh, okay. You know, like, Mrs. Yeah. Devereaux, how can I talk? Oh, you sound so upset. What's going on? Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, I'm going to record this. So like Caroline's like, oh, you know, he's on my side. He's mm-hmm. trying, he's going to try and help get evidence or whatever.
To build a case of neglect. So while Luke is talking in the other room, Caroline discovers a lot of weird stuff. A law book for beginners. Bones.
Estate law for dummies.
A drawer full of basically bones and hair. Bones, the skeleton key, photos of her.
Uh-huh. Like stalker photos.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, shit.
Like, wait a minute.
Why does he have a real estate law for dummies book?
Yeah. She's like, I know I'm cute and hot, but why is he stalking me?
No. Yeah. This is a problem. Suddenly, she turns around and Luke chokes Caroline out and says, good night, child, over her as she passes out. He ties her up, kind of hog ties her a little bit, and drives her back to Violet. Violet tells Luke that they aren't ready because they don't know where Ben is. And she tells Violet where, you know, Ben, you know, she's like, we need Ben. And Caroline then manages to get into her room with the brick dust as she's, you know, running around trying to find Ben. Violet's trying to find him. Mm-hmm. Luke's like, oh, you know, I'm going to watch her. You go do that. So there's a lot of scrambling and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Caroline manages to get back into her room where she, her bedroom where she has the brick dust. Mm-hmm. She goes in there. She manages to get out of the brick binding or the bindings. Well, actually, I forgot that, she asks Luke, she's like, I know, whatever you're going to do to me, can I just please have my picture of my dad with me? And Luke is like, okay, sure, I guess. And mm-hmm. then she's able to trick him a little bit. So then finally, you know, she gets all this brick dust. She has a big jar of it still from when she laid it out in the first place and lays it out everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Violet finally catches her. As she's running around, like, basically creating a shield for herself.
Right.
Violet catches her and blows something in her face. And she's like, you're not going to use my magic against me, mm-hmm. basically. And, you know, but then Violet's knocked down the steps and it's pretty violent and her leg is all broken and gross. And then Caroline seems like she's about to call the police, but then she's starting to lose consciousness because what the hell did she blow into her
more ketamine.
Caroline's face? Yeah, PCP. It's a powder ketamine. Yeah. I didn't know you like to get wet. Okay. She manages to call the police. She also calls Jill, and she's like, it's all real. All of it's real. And she calls the police. She gives them the address. She's like, we need help. Someone's hurt. Someone's really hurt. And then Violet and Luke are finally able to get to her. And she's ended up, Violet has run and run and run because this is a friggin' massive house. And she is in the hoodoo room. And she grabs all of the different components that are needed for this ritual. It's basically, she thinks it's a spell for protecting herself. Mm-hmm. And Violet enters the room and tells her the spell that she did isn't a spell that protects her, but it keeps her from leaving the circle.
Yeah. It like traps her.
Yeah. And now the record of the, that conjuring kind of record starts playing suddenly where she's like, where is it? Oh, it's over here on this record player that's now playing aloud. And Caroline protests that she actually doesn't believe. And, you know, she's like, I don't believe.
So it can't
help me. And Violet holds a mirror to Caroline and it shows images of the Thorpe girl, then Violet herself and Mama Cecile. And the mirror is just thrown into Caroline as she's knocked out and then wakens. She stands up and pulls a cigarette from Violet's pack of cigarettes and lights it as Violet is struggling on the floor mm-hmm. and not able to speak. Caroline says, thank you, child. And Luke says, Cecile, are you okay? And she mentions, it's harder every time, even harder than the lawyer. And they just don't believe anymore. And she also wanted a black one this time.
And he's like, you know the black ones don't stay.
Right.
Because they got mamas that tell them to get the hell out.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to reference, but I didn't want to say it quite yet. So Cecile is now in Caroline's body. And Caroline's body is in Violet's body, which is very messed up. Mm-hmm. And she's older and she's been beaten up a little bit.
Her leg's broke.
Her leg is broken.
And now we like understand like why Ben has been acting the way he's mm-hmm. acting, because now we know that Luke's actual soul is trapped in Ben's body.
Yes. And then, yeah, it's not great. So Cecile is in Caroline's body and, you know, gives Caroline's body a violent, or Violet's body gets some medicine, and she says, there, Caroline. And Jill shows up, and Caroline goes, Jill's like, didn't you call me? And she's like, what? I don't know. And then she goes, oh, fiddlesticks. yeah. I forgot I called you. And you're like,
ugh. Jill doesn't even, like, bat an eyelash Jill's at her like, saying fiddlesticks.
What the hell? And she's like, I'm so sorry, you know, it's been a crazy night. I forgot mm-hmm. that I even called you.
Yeah.
And then Luke tells Jill that Caroline meant so much to Violet and Ben that they left her the house. And now, and Jill's kind of there, like, as the friend, supportive friend to mm-hmm. Caroline.
Right.
And you're like, oh, gosh, I hope. What are they going to do to Jill? Mm-hmm. So now the real Luke and the real Caroline are trapped in the bodies of Ben and Violet, and they're driven away in the ambulance, and that's the end of the movie. I know this is kind of long, but there is just so much detail and like hoodoo stuff. I couldn't like gloss over it, I guess. But did you think that it was scary?
I definitely think that the first time that I saw this, I thought that it was scary. It's just creepy. You know, like it's a particular kind of scary. And I think that so much of it comes from the setting, because I remember like back when we did that horrible, horrible movie, The Reaping. You know, I made the argument that the one thing that of merit in that is the inherent creepiness of this, like, not just Deep South, but this bayou setting. It's the same thing that you get in Last Exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
Where it just feels everything, especially for America, it feels so old. Everything feels like mysterious and kind of convoluted and secret. Like the practices, the beliefs, like you just get this vibe of, you know, the people, like they don't kin to outsiders, and they don't, you know, they don't share what they do down there. And it's just like it's another world or another planet.
Right.
And like I 100% would love to VRBO that house, and just like as is, with all of the creepy stuff in it, like you could have an amazing spooky weekend. And so the setting does so much of the heavy lifting mm-hmm. for making everything that happens feel really creepy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the whole, it's kind of, you know, formulaic and everything of like this outsider coming in, and then we're discovering all of it with Caroline, like through her experience, bit mm-hmm. by bit, and right. then her learning more about, you know, things that she didn't know, and presumably we, the viewer, didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then anytime you call back to like those incredibly horrific racist practices of, you know, in U.S., history and, mm-hmm. and today anytime you loop that in, you know, because that's when we talk about like that's real horror, mm-hmm. like that's the scariest thing, because it's true, it's real, it's not supernatural, it's not made up, it's not a story, it happened,
right?
Yeah. And so you pair this creepy, spooky, supernatural practices and conjuring and summoning and mystery with all of that, and you pair that with actual real life brutality and cruelty, it makes it really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm not mad at them.
I'm not mad at them. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry for Luke and Caroline.
Yeah, the people now that are still
in this,
yeah.
But it's like
the first round, though, 100%, they had every right to
I'm like, what are you gonna
take
do?
Those people, take yeah. those white people.
I know. We're just going to live in here. This is fine.
Yeah, this is fine. We do everything to take care of this house anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you loved it. Do you think it's scary?
I definitely thought it was creepy. Mm-hmm. And I really like Kate Hudson. You know, this is right after, well, within a few years of her Almost Famous movie,
oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Which was like kind of a huge breakout role for her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I liked her. She seems likable, you know, like you kind of rooted for her a little bit, and she's so compassionate. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel, because sometimes in movies like this, you're like, God, why are you making such stupid decisions all the time?
Yeah.
Like, why are you so stupid? And for, as the viewer watching this, especially, you know, now I kind of think like, oh, she's just a compassionate person.
Yeah, she's
know?
Not like a wide-eyed idiot that yeah. is just allowing herself to be preyed on.
Mm-hmm. She seems very, very, has a lot of know-how, very smart.
Yeah.
And she seems like she really wanted to help her patient, mm-hmm. And even to her own demise,
detriment,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you felt really bad for her, and you wanted her to be successful and helping Ben. And yeah, I don't know. And the cast is so great.
Yeah.
You know, and they were so, you know, convincing. Mm-hmm. And they were really, you know, a lot of heavy hitters.
Yeah.
And so you don't feel, you know, like it's contrived, really. Mm-hmm. So that, with the setting and all the weird crap that was in yeah. the hoodoo stuff in the attic, made it a really fun movie and kind of a switcheroo where you're like, oh, you know, that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
So I would recommend it. I think it's not like terrifying, but it's a fun kind of scary,
yeah,
fun movie.
Yeah. And it's also fairly
minus the lynching.
Harmless.
That's not fun.
Yeah.
But it was a good one, though.
Yeah. It would be a good one for, like, you know, since we never talk about this anymore, like a younger-ish horror movie viewer, mm-hmm. because it doesn't have, you know, like, there's no sex, there's very little swearing, you know, like all of that, like stuff that parents might be concerned about, like it's not really present. It's spooky and creepy, but not like, probably not nightmare inducing. Yeah. You know, you would have to explain the lynching. I mean, I guess you wouldn't have to explain the entire history of lynching. You could just let a child think that it was a one-off murder. you know, if that's your privilege. But what I love is, like, going back and rewatching this after Get Out being made.
Right, yeah.
Because it's a reversal of that.
Yeah. There's and, somebody who, it's funny that you mentioned that, it was on YouTube that he's a podcaster, but like a YouTuber that was like, this is basically the same movie.
Yeah.
And I was like,
it's just
the
races,
you're right.
reversed.
You're
kind
of right. You're right about that.
Yeah. But yeah, just that idea of, you know, putting your soul in another's body. And then obviously, like, the two movies take a different kind of approach to what happens to the involuntary participant, mm-hmm. in the switcheroo.
Yeah.
And so, because, like, generally it seems like, especially like in this case, they can just throw away Violet, right? Because they're done with the body.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit about Caroline's soul that's now trapped in the body. Mm-hmm. So just however you can dispose of those people in a way that's not going to get you in wind up in jail, then mm-hmm. it's just garbage at that point.
Yeah. Oh, and then you're like, is it like a throwback to the beginning of the movie where the family doesn't want anything to do with them? And you're like,
were those more people?
More people? How much hooties? Hootie? That's right. How much hooties happening?
The Hootie and the Hoodoo. It's a new band. But yeah, I think it's a great movie. It's a fun movie. Like you say, the cast is really strong. I love John Hurt.
Me too. Ever since 1984, you're like, oh God, everything's terrible.
I would totally recommend this to anyone.
Yeah, it's a kind of also in the same wheelhouse as, you know, the others as far as being scary and viewable.
The big spooky house.
Yeah, viewable by
family
younger,
friendly.
Yeah, younger people too. And it makes me want to go visit New Orleans.
Yeah.
Not in a hot month, though, because I'm a big baby, but.
No, thank you. But yeah, and New Orleans, I've always, like, kind of, since I was a teenager, romanticized. I've never been there.
Mm-hmm.
If I did, it would 100% be, like, ghost tours, going to the cemeteries, going to the, you know, any thing that was related to American Horror Story, like, all of that stuff.
Yes.
I would totally, like, lean into it. I'd be like, all right, we're driving out to the bayou. We're going to find us some hoodoo rooms. Like,
I know. I'd be so excited. And I'd be like, I'm the ignorant sort of white lady.
I'm the white outsider. I'm gonna end up trapped in someone else's body.
Well, good luck to you.
Yeah.
If you're stuck in my body,
I'll just bring my brick dust
with your back pain.
Yeah, my back pain.
My back pain.
Yeah, and your tinnitus.
I'm like, this is not a trip.
You don't want this one. Trust me.
Yeah.
But if I could transfer my soul into Kate Hudson's body, 100% would do it.
Yeah. She's in her 20s at the time. So you're like,
Yeah. I don't know. I'd probably even do it
now.
Great
time.
I think she's older than us and I would still do it now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to rent this movie. So, and if anyone hasn't watched it, what's going to happen.
It
but it's fun.
Yeah,
it's
put it on the list. It's a good one to throw on for a nice spooky evening.
Yeah. And so we are going to move on to our summer series.
Yeah.
So we always have a project. I told my daughter what our project was this summer, and she said, your one last year was better.
Of course it was.
I was like, I didn't ask you.
Our one last year brought Final Destination into her life, and now that's a cornerstone of her personality.
Yeah.
So
she got like a t-shirt that has a Final Destination t-shirt.
Yeah.
Thanks to mommy. And an I Know What You Did Last Summer t-shirt yesterday she got a Hot Topic.
That's funny.
So this time it is a horror in technology.
Yeah, technological based horror.
Yeah. So to start off this theme, we're going to watch Megan, which was released in
2022. Yeah. So it's pretty recent. You do have to, you know, pony up to see it. But yeah, if you like the Terminator, watch Megan.
They're exactly the same.
They're exactly the same. Indistinguishable.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.